So, this is our next speaker. He's Sepp. He works at Amnesty Germany in the new Digital Task Force, Digital at Amnesty, and he will talk about human rights and technology. Please welcome him.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming. First of all, I'd like also to thank the organizers of this great Congress for inviting me. I'm really glad to be here today. First of all, because as far as I know, this is the first time that Amnesty International is present at a Hacker Congress. And many of you have approached me in the past few days asking me why hasn't Amnesty been active in the field of digital rights before. And frankly, I can't speak for the whole organization. I'm here as a kind of a spokesperson for Digital at Amnesty, a new task force, who just has been established informally within the German section of Amnesty International. And I don't know why Amnesty hasn't addressed digital rights with a special focus yet, but I think what I can say for me is that, or for our group, is that we will try to put a focus on these topics in the future. And I would like to start off, if we have a look at the first slide, the subtitle of my presentation today is A New Hope or The Empire Strikes Back. Star Wars fans will know what that where that actually comes from, and if we have a look at what kind of human rights issues we've had in the past, with a focus on digital, on the digital world, there have been a few. A talk has been reduced from 60 minutes to 30 minutes, so I'm not going to go into details about that. But there have been a couple of human rights issues, like the Shitao case, for example. Shitao has been released a couple of weeks ago, but he's been imprisoned for a long time by the Chinese government because he once he blocked on the internet. He just made use of his right to freedom of speech, and with the help of Yahoo, a U.S. company, he has been his contact details and his IP addresses have been tracked down, and so he could be detained. I think this is what really shows that there is something to the internet that has relevance for our human rights and for the our possibility to exercise these human rights. It is on the a New Hope slide because, as I said, Shitao has been released a couple of weeks ago. On the New Hope slide also, of course, the Arab Spring movement and what came from that. I think this is this has been this has shown really a great relevance to the human rights movement as a whole, that digital communications technology has been used. Bloggers and Facebook members have communicated and have tried to come together and to organize meetings and organize public demonstrations in the course of the Arab Spring, what we call the Arab Spring. On the other hand, there have been new ways to impart information, like WikiLeaks, for example. Think of the Afghanistan and Iraq information. Human rights violations that have been documented for the first time by these documents, and of course the much bigger issue was the release of secret U.S. diplomatic cables by WikiLeaks, And as the process has shown, assisted by Chelsea Manning, Amnesty International itself has made use of tools for a better exercise of human rights, like the panic button. The panic button is kind of a hidden button on your smartphone where human rights defenders can try to set an or kind of try to get out of an emergency situation by pushing that button, and that leads to somebody getting called, and so he can come to the rescue. No, that's the wrong one. On the other hand, and that's the Empire Strikes Back slide, is what came out of the Arab Spring. We have a kind of a setback on these, on what really these demonstrators had in mind when they started their uprisings. WikiLeaks has practically been closed. There was some problems to make payments to the Wiki to WikiLeaks with problems with the credit card transactions and so on. Julian Assange is now in embassy asylum in Ecuador, and Chelsea Manning, the informant, the whistleblower who actually disclosed the US cable files, is in prison for 35 years. That's at least the sentence for now. And on the other hand, we there are not only tools to or the information society doesn't only provide tools to enable or to facilitate the exercise of human rights, but also, on the other hand, tools to violate human rights. Technology has evolved quickly, and now we're close to what could be described a total surveillance state. And I think this is what the Edward Snowden case shows. What are digital human rights, after all? I'd like to start off by making a reference to the to a resolution of the Human Rights Council adopted in July 2012, stating that human rights are basically technologically neutral. Yeah, universal. That's a fact that has been accepted from the very beginning. So they don't apply just in the offline world, but also in the online world. And this resolution has made it clear again. The Human Rights Council has affirmed that the same rights that people have offline must also be protected online, and it made a special reference to the freedom of expression in this regard. But there are, of course, a number of other human rights that have a special relevance for the digital world, and I've just I just give you a short impression of what rights we consider to have that special relevance. It's not only the freedom of expression; it's also the right to access to information, to impart information, the right to privacy, the right to the protection of personal data. There might be a controversy about the actual extent to which copyright or other intellectual property rights might be human rights, and what the limitations may be. The freedom of assembly, we could think of like denial of service attacks or other forms of political protest, as far as they are connected to a political aim. And then there's the question of, is there anything like a virtual home that needs to be protected? If you think back to the Germans, might think back to the ruling of the Federal Constitutional Court, saying that there is a new fundamental right to the integrity of IT systems, and that's basically what could be discussed in this context. So, as I said, I don't have much time, so I go through the Snowden slides quite quickly, I think. And these files, these slides are have two main parts, as I can say. The first part is the one on the informant, the whistleblower, Edward Snowden. What human rights does he have? Which human rights are relevant in this case that could have been violated? And the other one is on his disclosures. So what human rights are at stake in this regard? Is there a human right to the protection as a whistleblower? I think all human rights organizations agree in this, that there is a human right to the protection as a whistleblower. And this is also backed by, for example, by the European Court of Human Rights, who has said that what is actually at stake here is the information of freedom, is the right to freely seek access and impart information. And as part of that, there might be a right of somebody who is actually, might even be legally obligated to keep a secret. He might even be allowed to impart this information, even if it's classified, with the public, subject to certain conditions, of course. And this is also Amnesty's opinion, that the freedom of expression and the informational freedom is limited in this regard. And as regards the rules that must be that must be applied with, there need to be national whistleblower laws that effectively protect these whistleblowers, and they must effectively protect them from excessive sanctions. Like laws must foresee that they are not excessively punished if they release information. The public interest must be considered in any way, so that if there is public interest in a certain information, this can override a legal obligation to keep a secret. And one must also consider the real damage that has that these information, or the release of this information, has on state secrets or on legitimate aims of the state. This is just what the European Court of Human Rights has said on this in this regard. There's little scope for restrictions on debate of questions of public interest, and that actually applies in general. So even if there might be some negative impacts of for the state. In this information being released, public interest can justify this. And on the other hand, in another case, in Guia versus Moldova, he set some criteria for the assessment of the proportionality. So a narrow definition of what can be released and what cannot be released under the informational freedom right. These are, for example, these are criteria that have to be assessed in this analysis, whether or not a whistleblower is protected by human rights. This is, for example, whether there exist alternative channels to remedy the wrongdoing. Could he go to his officials, to his bosses, and say there is information that needs to be out in the public, or that there are wrongdoings of the state that need to be addressed. Has he sought these alternative channels if they exist? Is there any public interest that, in the disclosures? As I said, there might be, this might be an overriding interest. Is the information, the authenticity of the information needs to be assessed. So is it credible that this these documents are true? And what is the actual damage to the state, to the authority in this regard? And last but not least, the motive of the whistleblower. Did he act to the public good, or did he act just because he wanted to he wanted to do harm to the state's legitimate goals or interests? There are some principles that have been drafted. These are on the right to the protection of a whistleblower, and these are, for example, the Johannesburg principles of 1996 on national security, freedom of expression, and access to information. And these give some guidelines on how these whistleblowers can actually be protected, and what is a legitimate national security interest that can prevent whistleblowers from protection. And the recently adopted Tswane principles on national security and the right to information have also been signed by Amnesty International. They give further guidance in this regard. I, for time reasons, I can't go into details on that. So what has actually been the problem the US had with Snowden's releases? They accused him of theft of government property, of unauthorized communication of national defense information, and a willful communication of classified communications intelligence information to an unauthorized person. These were the three charges that were brought up. And Amnesty said in this regard that the revelations about human rights violations are covered by the right to freedom of speech. So there is clearly not a state interest that can speak against the release of this information. And any trial against Edward Snowden would amount to political persecution. These are a couple of other aspects in, of the Snowden case with regard to his seeking asylum in Russia, and could he be extradited and stuff like that. And what about the Guardian pressure? The pressure put by the UK government on the Guardian to destroy files and hard disks, and on David Miranda to give information about this case. On the other hand, we have the information that has been released and that gives credible evidence of massive human rights violations. And what Amnesty has said in this regard is basically that the right to privacy is has been violated. And the right to privacy is a human right that is enshrined in many human rights, international human rights instruments, such as the Universal Declaration on Human Rights and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and also at a regional level in the European Convention on Human Rights. And it needs to be said because this is exactly what the US government and also what US jurisprudence denies, that from the right to privacy, there's covered not only the content of the messages, but also the metadata. And this is crucial in this regard because, as has shown, the phone data tapping, for example, with a Verizon order, allows exactly that, that metadata of telephone calls are stored for a long period. there are certain limits with regard to the encroachment with the right to privacy, and this is, for example, that any surveillance measures must be based on a legal norm, so they must be lawful. But this is not everything. They must also pursue a legitimate aim. National security may be a legitimate aim, but this is something that needs to be narrowly defined. And thirdly, any encroachment needs to be proportionate. So what is also at stake here is the freedom of expression. And a recent Pan America survey has shown that nearly 25% of all writers, this is the Writers Association, and 25% of all writers in question said that they that the disclosures of the NSA files have led them to think about what they actually write and what they don't. So I think this is a very worrying statement that shows that there is a significant chilling effect to the exercise of freedom to the freedom of expression in this regard, that it's not only the right to privacy that is at stake here. Amnesty International has also said that there is a there is an interference with the informational freedom, and it has done so through a human rights claim made to the IPT, that is the Investigatory Powers Tribunal in the UK, and the only official body that can judge on secret surveillance measures in this regard. Amnesty International has said that the reception by the UK of information from the US intercepted through PRISM and upstream programs, the use by the UK of the Tempora program, and the lack or the insufficiency of the UK legal framework regulating those operations violate human rights. And it has made a case that the complete lack of proper legal basis and regarding the use of US intercepted information violates human rights and also the disproportionate application of these information. And on the other hand, that the current legal framework in place in UK, the regulatory Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, which governs the surveillance in the UK, is woefully inadequate and urgently needs reform. So, and also that there are no effective safeguards in this act regarding the surveillance of external communications. There are some limits with regard to the to internal communications, but communications that go without the UK are not effectively protected. And on the other hand, Amnesty's right, as I just said, to seek, receive, and impart information, so the information of freedom, is unlawfully impaired by the fact that the sources would be discouraged to communicate with Amnesty. So Amnesty has a lot of informants on human rights violations all over the world, and these sources might be deterred from communicating with Amnesty if they knew that their communications are intercepted. There are a couple of other initiatives which I don't have time to go into detail right now. Most prominently, I think the claim brought before the European Court of Human Rights by Big Brother Watch, the Open Government Partnership, and Constanze Kurz of the Chaos Computer Club. And and let us not forget that even the German government has taken an initiative together with the Brazilian government on a a General Assembly resolution at the UN General Assembly on the right to privacy in the digital age that has been adopted unanimously by all UN member states. There are a couple of other initiatives, but I think I should come to a conclusion on this. So what is the actual impact of all this? I think evidence has shown that human rights are being trampled in the name of national security. And while nobody can give a proper and internationally consistent definition of what national security actually is, so this is even more worrying. And to the Five Eyes intelligence agencies, just about anything that secures their power in the world seems to be justified for national security purposes. And anything in the national interest seems actually apt to counter attacks on the national security. Technology can solve a lot of these issues, but not everything. If you, for example, encrypt your communication, this applies to your content, but not to the metadata. If you use Tor, you can anonymize your communication and also your metadata, but that makes you suspicious and thus an NSA target. You can pimp up your PC security, that's fine, but do you really think this will prevent the NSA from breaking in? Personally, I don't think. You can engage in a security race with the NSA practically, and you will probably lose this game. So what actually can make a difference is political solutions. And I think in this regard, we need some cooperation. We need to join our forces. Because as Bruce Schneier has said, if you think your technology can solve your security problems, then you don't understand technology and you don't understand your problems. So I'm quickly move forward to a quote by Tim Berners-Lee. He said, "I believe we have reached a critical juncture where if we do not unite and fight for our rights to privacy, freedom of information, freedom of association, and freedom of expression in this new digital world, they will be taken away. Human rights defenders like Amnesty are critical to win the battle." Digital at Amnesty is a newly evolving task force at German level, and we hope that we're going to find a lot of other sections within Amnesty International that will join us. But we also need you. We need the hackers. We need the hackers community. We need digital rights activists from other organizations to join us and to cooperate with us. Because there is cooperation on the other side as well. We know that national security agencies and intelligence agencies all over the world cooperate to violate our human rights. So what we should do is to cooperate in fighting these violations. What is your share in this cooperation, or what could be your share? Your technical know-how, of course, and your community that is very networked, and I have to say this again, that Amnesty is a newbie on this stage with regard to the digital rights. We have said a couple of times in the Chelsea Manning case, for example, and on WikiLeaks, on the Shitao case, we have been involved in all this, and we have voiced our concerns, but not as focused as we're trying to do that now. And you do that for a long time. There are citizen rights groups that I know personally in Germany. They do that for a long time. And but still, I think we need to join our forces on that. What is our share? I think Amnesty has a very good standing in what regards human rights. We are a global organization with 3 million supporters worldwide. We have a high credibility because we are an independent and impartial organization that has consultative status with some of the UN bodies that are concerned with human rights issues, the Human Rights Council, and the ECOSOC. So I believe that both you and us, we have a lot in common. We have common goals, and we should use that to cooperate in order to fight this war on privacy that has taken place and that has been disclosed by Edward Snowden, but also on other digital rights issues that are relevant. And Eric Schmidt's infamous statement comes to my mind when I heard that these disclosures, they were actually meant with regard to users' privacy. He said, if you don't, I hope I find that here. Because I don't remember it exactly. If you have something that you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. And I think with regard to users' privacy, this is really an inappropriate statement. But if you turn it onto the intelligence agencies, it suddenly makes sense. You shouldn't be doing that. If you keep it secret, maybe it's for a reason that you don't want anybody to know what you're doing against human rights. And so, in the end, what can you do to take action? We would like to invite you to our assembly. We will hold a self-organized session at 3 p.m. at the Noisy Square and would like to discuss with you what we can do, how we can take part in the movement, and what we can actually, how we can actually cooperate better together, because I think at national level, we've done too little to join our forces by now, and we can do more. So I would like to cordially invite you to this session, and with this, I think I'm already over time, so I would like to thank you all, and hopefully see you soon at 3 p.m. Thank you.